What do you tell a friend, a lover, or a family member who comes into your space and dumps their negativity on you? How much are you going to put up with before enough becomes too much? Also in this episode, how can believing in God make life easier? Stay tuned, I've got some interesting answers for you.
Welcome to Slightly Askew with Nancy at Noon, the show that takes an honest look into the heart of all things that shape the fabric of your entire life. And now, here's Nancy.
Hello, my faithful listeners and all the new people who are tuning in today. Are you ready to have some fun? I love the questions you're sending me. Keep them coming. They are lots of fun to answer. If you haven't had your questions answered on air yet, or if you have problem areas in your life that you want help with, I have a personal email consultation service. Pick the area of your concern, pick your problem, send it to me, and I will give you step-by-step instructions for solving it. It's that simple. You ask, I answer. Okay, let's dive right in and take the first question of the day. Dear Nancy, how do you handle a good friend slash lover who comes over to my house to spend time with me but ends up bringing a lot of negativity? Always is complaining about his life, is angry about others, speaking contempt about others, family members, and the government, and generally spends the time talking about things he can never change. I listen out of respect, love, and concern, but find myself discouraged at how to react or help. I often get a headache from the negativity and start to resent his pollution of my space and time. I'm lost at how to handle this. Can you help? Signed, Susie from California. Susie, my dear, I have a sense you know exactly how to handle this situation. You just haven't given yourself permission to do or say what you need to do and say. Or you don't want to come across as the bad guy, or hurt your friend's feelings, or lose him as a friend and lover. Even though I know you know the answer, I want to address this question on air because many people are faced with this situation and never really do address it. They just suffer through it. What if, instead of talking negatively, your friend handed you a vial of cyanide each time he came over and asked you to drink it while he sat and watched? Would you drink it out of respect, love, and concern just so as not to hurt his feelings? Here's the thing. You very clearly know his energy is adversely affecting you. He is affecting you emotionally, mentally, and physically. You resent his pollution of your space and time. Resentment is not a positive emotion. He is even affecting you physically and mentally to the point where you are suffering headaches. You might as well just drink the cyanide and be done with it quickly rather than enduring the long, drawn-out, slow torture to the inevitable death of your heart, your spirit, and your inspiration. No, don't do that. I was just making a point. Don't anybody do that. There is a better way. First of all, your friend is toxic. I'll bet you he goes home feeling better and you feel worse. Not just worse because of the toxic energy he left behind, but because those sentiments of respect, love, and concern sound to me like plain old-fashioned guilt, self-abuse, and low self-esteem. I'm not saying you don't love him and care for him. I'm suggesting that maybe you are putting his health, happiness, and well-being before your own. This doesn't serve anyone, especially him, and absolutely not you, as I'm sure you know. 9 out of 10 people would say, ditch the guy. Who needs him around? But obviously, that's not what you want to do or hear. You want resolution, and I'm going to help you get that. Let's use a strategy I call solution resolution. I don't really have a name for this strategy. I just made that up on the spot. But it sounds good, so let's go with it. Step one is about getting totally clear about what's really going on here. Before you can resolve this issue, you need to look at a few things in your own life. Now, instead of making this about him, let's make this about you. I'm going to throw a few questions your way, and I want you to seriously ponder them. The answers that hurt a little are the areas you personally need to address in your life. Number one, why are you holding on to this relationship in the first place? Number two, what need is it serving for you? Number three, what void is it fulfilling, if any? And is it really fulfilling it? Number four, do you hope he is going to change one day and suddenly become all positive, the man you need him to be? Number five, are you lonely and he's the only guy showing up in your life right now? Or the only one that looks suitable? All women hope their men will change, and all men hope their women will stay the same. Neither are realistic expectations. Both lead to disaster. The biggest question here is, what purpose is he serving in your life at this time? You said you don't know how to help him. Why do you want to help him? I'm not being nasty or insensitive. I'm just asking you to dig deep inside yourself to get to the bottom of what's really going on here. Everybody needs help in some way at some time in their lives. Why him? Why now? Why you? I learned a long time ago that if someone wants help, especially a man, he will ask for it. And if he doesn't ask, it means he doesn't think anything is wrong, or at least won't admit to himself or to others that he's not happy and something is wrong. I don't care what planet men are from, Mars, Jupiter, Pluto, Saturn, if they don't specifically ask for your help, then don't give it to them. Because anything we as women say that's even slightly leaning in the help direction is going to be misunderstood and resented and probably come across as a nagging know-it-all who thinks she knows how to run his life better than he does. We usually do, because it's much easier to find the flaws in someone else than to see them in ourselves. But that's not the point. If you didn't ask for help, you can offer it once, maybe twice, then drop it altogether. And again, ask yourself, why do you feel the need to help him? Usually, when we want to help people who haven't asked, it's because we think they need improvement. We think they would be happier if they did something different. It's true, your man probably would be happier if he was more positive, but until he realizes this on his own, he's not going to change anything about his life, period. Can you live with that? Okay, that was step one. See, it was pretty easy. It was just about getting clear. Step two, now that you have clarity as to why, and I'm assuming you took a little bit of time to figure these things out and look deep inside yourself. Now that you have clarity as to why he is in your life, what purpose he serves, it's time to look at your solution resolution options. A, you could continue to endure his negativity and let it physically, mentally, and emotionally bring you down. B, you could help him indirectly. More about that in a moment. Or C, you could be very candid with him and tell him how you are feeling. Okay, so option A is self-explanatory. So let's look at option B. I sense you are a kind and caring woman who has a lot of compassion for people. Otherwise, you wouldn't have put up with your friend slash lover's behavior for so long. You truly want to help him be happy, but not at the expense of your own health and happiness anymore. At least I'm hoping not. Here's something pretty cool I learned many years ago, actually. It's a technique called Ho'oponopono. I pronounce it Ho'oponopono because it just seems to flow better. Ho'oponopono because I like the flow of it better. It was created by Dr. Len, a therapist who healed the very disturbed mentally ill prisoners in a prison for the criminally insane in Hawaii. It was a very scary prison. I wasn't there personally, but I can tell you from reading all the different stories about it, it was not the place anybody wanted to be. The staff didn't want to be there. They didn't want to walk down those corridors, and they started not showing up for work or calling in sick or quitting. They were afraid of being attacked by the prisoners. Dr. Len never even saw the prisoners. He had an office and their files. When he was reviewing their files, he was healing the part of himself that created the conditions in those people. Ho'oponopono is about total responsibility. When we think of being responsible for our lives, we think that means being responsible for our thoughts, our words, our actions. But Dr. Len took it a mile further and said that everything in our lives is our own creation. If we take complete responsibility for our lives, that means that everything we see, everything we hear, taste, touch, and everything we experience is our responsibility because it is in our life. Nothing exists except as a projection from inside ourselves. What that means for you, Susie, is that the problem isn't with your man, it's with you. And if you want your man to change, you need to change first. It's like looking at the face in the mirror and waiting for the face to smile back at you. You have to be the one to smile first. This is a powerful, life-changing technique. It takes time and devotion, but if you really want to help him, this is the way to do it. And he doesn't even have to know. The third option is just to be very candid with your man. Chances are that he has no idea whatsoever about how negative and complaining he is. Sometimes it's a habit people get into, and it takes someone else to point it out to wake them up. You could say something like, I love you, babe, and I really do want to spend time with you, but you have a lot of unresolved anger issues that I'm not qualified to help you with, nor do I want to. It's not my job to be your venting receptacle. I want to have fun with you and feel good about our time together, but I don't. And listening to you complain about everything and not take any steps to make changes, well, it just brings me down. I don't want to have a nap and take an aspirin every time you leave. So, until you clean up your attitude and energy, we need to take a break. In my solution resolution, step one was about getting clear, and step two was about looking at your options. There are probably many more options, but those are some of the basic choices. A, don't do anything. B, take full responsibility for everyone and everything in your life and help him behind the scenes and yourself. Or C, talk straight with him. All right, step number three. Now it's time to take action. Changes don't happen without some sort of action. And now it's time to make a decision and take that action, whatever it is. We all need to make decisions based on self-love. When we have compassion for ourselves and make choices based on honoring and nurturing our own needs, it sends a message to others to do the same. What's best for us ends up being best for the other people in our lives too. It might sound selfish, but it's actually selfless because everyone benefits. Susie, when you stop enabling your man, he will either start growing or move on to someone else who is willing to feed him their energy. He's also enabling you to remain a silent victim. I don't think you want to be that anymore. None of us want that for you or for ourselves. I hope that helps. It's not easy, but when you are ready, I know you'll do what you need to do. All right, we're going to take a short break and be right back to answer another question. If you have questions about love, life, relationships, happiness, health, and well-being, please email them to me at nancy@nancyatnoon.com, and maybe yours will be the ones chosen to be answered on air. If you need answers now, I provide a personal and private email consultation service. For details, please visit the Ask Nancy page on my website, nancyatnoon.com. And now it's time to spice things up a little bit with a spice of the day. Today's spice of the day is coriander. I used to be one of those cooks who only used salt and pepper to season my meals and cinnamon for my baking, but not anymore. I love to spice up my food. One of the spices I've grown to love is coriander. I use it in pretty much all of my dinner dishes. Coriander and cilantro are not the same, but they come from the same plant. The leaves are called cilantro, and the dried seeds are called coriander. Coriander has a cooling effect on the body and is, in fact, the most cooling of all the spices. So if you have a very hot, spicy dish, you could balance the heat by adding a cooling herb or spice such as coriander. So how does this help you? Well, if you have a fever, you will want to eat foods that reduce your body temperature. That's why they tell you to drink cold fluids and eat popsicles. The logic of this advice is correct, although the application of it is incorrect. Cold drinks raise your body temperature. It's best to drink warm or room temperature beverages and not ones that are sugar laden. Sugar shuts down your immune system for several hours. So a popsicle or ice cream may seem like a good idea, but in actuality, it is doing you more harm at a time when your immune system needs a boost, not a setback. Coriander, on the other hand, has a cooling effect that does help reduce fever. Mix it with a little milk and honey and enjoy! Coriander is an excellent source of iron, photonutrients, and flavonoids. It also is good for digestion, it stimulates appetite, it helps you fight off allergens, helps purify the blood, and it's a natural aphrodisiac. It's been very successful in treating anxiety, depression, and panic attacks because of its calming nature. The essential oil in coriander is believed to stimulate creativity, optimism, and imagination. Coriander is also anti-inflammatory. It's actually all the antis. Anti-inflammatory, antioxidant, antiseptic, antifungal, antibacterial, and it has diuretic properties. It's used to balance and reset the body and mind. It's helpful for arthritis, urinary tract infection, nausea, mood swings, diabetes, bladder infection, conjunctivitis, and skin conditions such as dry skin and eczema. coriander is beneficial in preventative oral care, Alzheimer's, and memory loss. These are just a few of the nutritive, preventative, and healing abilities of coriander. Since many of these spices have been around and used for, thousands of years, there's a lot of really good information out there that you can access for your own personal interest or your health concerns. I'm just giving you a small taste so that you will be eager to use spices as a daily part of your own diet and meal plan. Remember to be playful and have fun when embarking on your creative culinary journey. Life, just like cooking, is all about the spices you shake into the mix. So don't forget, my friends, to spice it up. Spice it up. We are back. You know, sometimes the questions I get are only touching the surface of what the questioner wants to ask. This next question falls into that category. He actually sent me several questions, all kind of rolled into one. Dear Nancy, how do I translate religion and God into common feelings? How can I understand religion and religious concepts and relate them to my everyday life? How can I make these concepts useful in my everyday life? How can believing in God make my life easier? Signed, God-seeking Anthony. It cracked me up when I read how he signed his email. I'm sure he meant it as God-seeking Anthony, because that's what he is doing. He is trying to find God. But he says so clearly that God is seeking him. God to Anthony, come in, please. Come in, please. God seeking Anthony. Anyway, just having a little bit of fun. The simplest way to answer this question is to say, stop looking. He's right there, and he's telling you that. But this is one of those cases where it's very difficult to see what's in front of us, not just for you, Anthony, but for all seekers. You are a very logical person, I can tell by your questions. You want to believe in God, and you need proof that he exists. I can't give that to you. There is no proof, yet everything around you is proof. Here's a fun little story. I rented a room to a very nice young man. He was a scientist in his own right. Everything had to be proven before he would believe it. But everything can't be proven. Science hasn't caught up to life yet and probably never will. God or universal energy or universal consciousness or however we want to label it is bigger than science. Anyway, this man, we'll call him Carrie, had a history of ghost and alien experiences. In fact, his whole family, three generations back, had a history of experiences in the realms most of us can't see and don't understand. But Carrie told me that until he gets personally abducted by an alien spaceship, he's not buying any of it. And maybe that won't even be proof enough for him then. He told me about so many experiences, but, you know, it's not enough proof for him. I would love to have some of those experiences. Well, yeah, I would. He will never find the proof he's looking for until he understands that some things aren't logical. We can't figure it all out with our brains. How many of your past lives do you remember? If any, probably just bits and pieces of them, concepts. Yet all of them are stored in our bodies. But how do we access them? They are stored in our DNA as emotional memory and concepts. When we get a sense that we've been here before, it's because our DNA is sending our brains a message. These messages come as concepts of experiences rather than full memory of the events of those experiences. I remember the first time I went to the south of France, I knew I'd been there before. It felt like home. I mean, it seriously felt like home. I even had a sense of being an artist from a different life and having my shop under the wall that surrounds the town of Antibes. You know, these memories come to us through our senses, and it's usually because we have unfinished business. Anthony, you will never know God through logic or proof. If you witness a miracle, you will always give it some logical explanation. That's just how scientific brains work. There's a beautiful story about a beautiful painting by Vermeer. It's called Girl with the Pearl Earring. No one knows who the girl in the painting is. Vermeer had 15 kids, but we don't know if she is his lover, his daughter, or just a totally made-up person. The painting and the young girl are both absolutely stunningly beautiful. Her mouth is partially open as if she is about to say something, but we don't know what. The painting is unresolved, so we keep coming back to it over and over and over again. It draws us in because of the mystery and the wonder and the beauty, and because we want to know. If we knew what she was saying or feeling or thinking, it would be complete for us, and we'd forget about it. We'd move on. But we don't. Same deal with a wild and unkempt garden. There's a twisted path through the tall grass and wild flowers. It leads us into the shade beneath a dark tree. What's living there? Why isn't the grass cut? Who let the flowers grow so wild? We don't know, but it leaves us with a sense of mystery and curiosity, always coming back to look deeper. A garden like this is far more captivating than a perfectly manicured yard where the grass is 2 inches tall and the flowers are all in a row. There's nothing for us to complete. We get bored and move on. You know, it's okay that we don't know everything. Mysteries add magic to life. You won't find God by making flowcharts and drawing diagrams. Higher consciousness isn't achieved by thinking. It's understood by listening to the silence between breaths. It's realized by becoming one with the flower, or the rock, or the ocean. How do I translate religion and God into common feelings? Why would you want to? God, or universal consciousness, is so much more than that. Why apply limitations? How can I understand religion and religious concepts and relate them to my everyday life? What religion and what religious concepts do you want to relate to? Inherent in most of the world's religions throughout time is spirit, and that spirit is the same for all religions across the board. It's the interpretations that are different. Send me a particular religious concept you want to integrate into your life, and I will help you. How can I make these concepts useful in my everyday life? Well, are you asking how can you be a better man? That's basically what these concepts are there for. They're just different paths to the same destination. How can believing in God make my life easier? For starters, you wouldn't be using so much time and energy trying to prove God's existence. You'd have more time to ski and try out new vegetarian recipes. You'd have lots more time to meditate and focus on creating your life rather than trying to dissect it into logical components. I suppose it also depends on what God you want to believe in. Is it the one you learned about in Sunday school who took on a human persona and punished wrongdoers? Or is it the divinity that lies within yourself that you're trying to reach? God-seeking Anthony, my advice to you is to relax your skepticism. Just for a little while, not forever, just for a little while, and give your left brain a rest. Do some active form of meditation like painting or playing a musical instrument. Oh, maybe even chanting, and just see what comes up. Be sensitive to little bubbles or aha moments. Don't try to explain them away with logic. Just let them be. You don't even need to try to understand them. Just let them be. It seems like what you really want is for someone to make you believe in God, you know, to prove his existence to you. That's the journey, my friend. If there is a ball in front of you and someone tries to tell you it's blue, they use all kinds of scientific methods to prove the light refractions in the eyes and the way it bounces back and makes the ball look blue. But all you see is a ball, you will never believe it's blue. I'm going to leave you with a kind of weird story. Actually, it's totally weird. In a small town in Mexico, there's a statue of Jesus that's about 300 years old. Well, it was accidentally discovered to have real human teeth, with roots and all. No one knows where the teeth came from, or whose they are, or if they belong to more than one person. Back then, it was not uncommon for people to donate body parts to the church, like human hair. But no one knows if these teeth were voluntarily donated or if they were extracted against someone's will, and they don't know if they came from a living or a dead person. The teeth were in great condition, but the strange thing is, As if that wasn't strange enough, the mouth of the Jesus sculpture is almost completely closed and the teeth are not visible. You'd have to deliberately look inside his mouth to see them. So, Anthony, look carefully at the concepts you want to integrate into your life. Many of these concepts come and go throughout time. Only true spiritual principles remain unchanging and stand the test of eternity. Your challenge is to know the difference. Religion, spirituality, and God can be very confusing to understand and decipher the truth from the dogma. If you are on the path to deepen your spirituality and connect with the divinity within, I'm here to help. With that, I shall bid you adieu. Until next time, my friends and faithful followers.
Thanks for joining us again on Slightly Askew with Nancy at Noon. We've enjoyed your company and hope it's been fun for you too. If you like what you're hearing, please share us with your friends and family because, well, they might like us too. You can find us online at nancyatnoon.com. We've got fascinating blog posts, recipes, self-help books, weight loss CDs, coaching programs, art, jewelry, and all kinds of other cool stuff. Go ahead and check us out. nancyatnoon.com. You'll be glad you did.
If your house is in a mess, then your life is in a mess. You may think you have it all together, but your mental and emotional confusion show up in the telltale signs of your physical disarray. We're going to talk about a cool new way of organizing that will get you back on track and out of clutter overwhelm.
Welcome to Slightly Askew with Nancy at Noon. The show that takes an honest look into the heart of all things that shape the fabric of your entire life. And now, here's Nancy.
Hello, hello, hello. I'm Nancy, and we're back again to rock your world with tips and strategies that will help make your life more fun, more meaningful, and today, more clutter-free. You are listening to episode number 5. Today, Allison Kiro will be joining me all the way from New York City to help answer what might be the single most asked question of all times. Where do I begin? Allison is a decluttering and organizational expert. She has a very unique and simple strategy that takes a lot of the overwhelm out of the battle to get rid of stuff and get organized. She is so good at what she does that she's been invited to appear on the Dr. Oz Show, the CBS Morning Show, and the Mike Huckabee Show. Her opinion has been so highly sought after that she has been interviewed by the New York Times, CNN, and U.S. News and World Report. I'm betting we all have clutter in our lives, and if you are like me, the hardest part of the clutter dilemma is making the decision about what to keep and what to get rid of. I'm not a hoarder by any means, and I don't even consider myself unorganized, but for the last 5 years, after my daughters and my now ex-husband went their separate ways, I've been trying to clear out, clean up, and organize 35 years of raising a family in my home. I get started, then something urgent demands my attention and I never get back to where I was. And I have so many different areas in the home and in the outbuildings and grounds. Kind of makes it sound like I live on a manor estate or something. Nope, just an average size house with an average size property. Anyway, I read something on Allison's blog that really hit home for me. She said, "It's never just clutter. This is about you not making decisions that directly affect your life and the effect it's now having on you. Time lost, money lost, confusion, exhaustion, frustration, and overwhelm. Do you enjoy these feelings?" So I have to say that I have experienced all of them, and no, I do not enjoy any of them. So let's bring on our expert to help us out. So, Allison, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. I'm so excited to be here.
And I'm so excited to have you. I've been looking forward to this since we met on LinkedIn.
Was it LinkedIn? Yeah, me too.
Yeah. I have a question from a listener that I would love for you to answer. So right. Some of my listeners might remember Dee. She's the young, and I'll just let you know who she is, Allison. She's a young woman who wrote to me a few weeks back. She had just moved into her own apartment. She had graduated from university, was going to start a job, and didn't really know how to life. So she wanted help with lifing. Well, she's cleaned her apartment and painted a wall, and now she wants. Now she has another question. So what she said is, "Dear Nancy, I need more help. My life is in boxes. I managed to get rid of the grime and gross-ass bugs in my apartment, and I painted my bedroom a pretty pink color. But I started my job, and my schedule is all over the place, and I'm too tired when I get home to unpack. Where do I start? How do I organize my space and make it cozy? Signed, Desperate D." So, Allison, we are all, especially me, super eager to learn the secret to your magic strategy. Where do we begin to organize and how do we keep going once we've started? I know those are two questions, so let's do the how do we get started?
Well, yeah, and that's the thing is that with all those boxes there, no wonder she's exhausted because it's just a bunch of clutter sitting in her home that really doesn't have a space and a home for themselves. So right now it's just sort of a, I have to do this clutter, both taking up physical space and then also taking up, mental clutter as well. And so what I would recommend for her is if she's really seeing that she doesn't have a lot of time and she's really not feeling very energetic, is if she knows what boxes have what in them, the best thing to do is to prioritize them and say, okay, what are the things that I need now to make me feel like I've got my creature comfort? So maybe it's the first thing is to unpack all of your kitchen stuff so that you can make and prepare meals that are going to give you energy and so that you'll have more energy to devote towards getting your apartment and your space fixed up. The other most key important part of your space to be done immediately is your bedroom, because that is the place where you go to rest and rejuvenate. And if you don't have the energy because you're not sleeping well, you're not going to be able to get anything organized in your life, and you're going to be feeling like you're always playing catch up. So if you've just moved in and you're feeling like you're short on time and short on energy, making sure that, you know, you're eating well, you're getting enough sleep, but also that you're at least your bedroom space is set up just how you want it so that it's you know, something where it feels really relaxing to you. So I also suggest in those cases, no electronics in the bedroom, or if you do have them, try and cover them up at night, but especially trying to keep your cell phones and things like that. All that electricity has an energy and it keeps you awake. Having a lot of clutter in your bedroom is also going to keep you awake. Keeping any sort of financial and other materials in your bedroom is going to keep you awake. So anything that doesn't belong in your bedroom needs to get out of your bedroom immediately. And then all the things that do belong in your bedroom should be put away as soon as possible. And then once you've got those two areas done, little by little, tackle a box a night if that's all you can do. But at least you're going to get it done eventually versus just going, well, I'm not going to do any of it. And if you're too tired one night, that's okay. Give yourself a break and then plan to maybe devote an hour to just taking one or two boxes apart. And again, in no time at all, you'll have your apartment up and getting ready. And it's really about making sure that you're doing smaller tasks of really small self-love based decisions so that this will keep your momentum up, because what keeps us trapped in disorganization and what holds us in the exhaustion and the frustration is the feelings of guilt, shame, and fear that end up coming up with the clutter, because a lot of times we have a lot of stuff in our home and we don't even know not only where it is, but what it is. And all that stuff holds not only physical clutter, but sometimes spiritual and definitely mental clutter. And so when we start taking these jobs, and not as a big whole task, but just breaking it down, even just starting with your clothing and going, do I like this? Do I need this? Do I want this? You know, do I use this and wear this? And making those small love-based decisions of, you know, that shirt does look good on me, or that color doesn't flatter me anymore. I just don't enjoy wearing that anymore. It's gotten its use. And then letting those things that that you don't like, that you don't use, that you don't want, that aren't serving you in a way that make you feel energetic or make you feel content in your life, and getting those out of the way. Because the more that you can get rid of your physical clutter, you're going to find that you not only have more space in your home, but that space starts opening up in your life. And then you can allow yourself to take those decisions that you made for your physical clutter and put them into decisions of, who should I be spending my time with? What activities do I want to get involved in? Is this the right career for me? And when you really start using those small self-love based decisions to make sure that you always are heading in the right track, you're going to get all of your goals accomplished, and it's not going to seem as challenging anymore, because you're always constantly looking out to make sure that you are taking care of yourself. And that does include getting a lot of rest, you know, eating good foods, and really taking care of yourself so that you have the energy to open up your life and be more productive and get more done in less time.
I want to go back a little bit here, because you touched on quite a few really good points. Well, the first one is the self-based love decisions, and then everything is energy. Let's just go into those a little bit more. What exactly is a self-love-based decision?
Well, what it is, you know, a lot of things, we've got so many things coming at us, especially in the Western Hemisphere, of buy this, do that, be that, blah, blah, blah. And it's so much mental chatter being thrown at us that we end up getting overwhelmed. And so when you go through your stuff and you make that small decision of, I'm going to keep this because I like it, because I want it in my life, and because I need it, not because your Aunt Ida gave it to you, or it was your ex-boyfriend's, or it was a family heirloom, or you bought it but it doesn't fit, or whatever the excuse is as to why you have this thing in your house. If it's not just based on I like it and want it and use it, it's not serving you at all in any healthy way. And so when you make that small self-love based decision of, I'm going to keep this in my life because it gives me energy, or it makes me happy, or I look good in it, or, you know, those kinds of things, it opens your life up to a lot of possibilities And it allows you to really create the life that you want to have. And if you work on getting rid of your physical clutter first, you really can build up that skill in a tangible way that then you can just keep using that decision-making tool to create everything in your life the way you want it to be. Is that friendship fortifying me and giving me energy, or is that person an energy sucker and I feel exhausted by spending 10 minutes with that person? You know, once that awareness is there, you can make that decision of, is this in my life good for me or not? And when you make self-love decisions, you can figure out whether it's good for you or not a lot more easily than if you're just sort of trying to tackle everything at once and you're so left in a ball of, exhaustion, frustration, and overwhelm that you can't even see straight. So if you just take it one t-shirt at a time and you really make this decision based on what you like and what you need and what's best for you, it really can transform your life one shirt at a time and then transforming into spiritual and energetic and other physical kind of decision making.
It's really difficult to get rid of things someone close to us gave us, like parents or grandparents or someone who's passed on. It may not even be serving us.
But it's like, oh, you know, that person's gone. I'll never have something. And this was like a memento. There's so much guilt involved in that. How do we deal with that alone?
Well, I mean, you know, in those kinds of cases, you're either going to reach a point where you're ready to let that go if you're really aware of it and say, you know, Aunt Ida made you a sweater and she's passed along and that sweater itches you and it's too big and you never wear it. But it's stuffed in the back of your closet. How is that serving your Aunt Ida and how is that serving you? You've just created some sort of a unwanted landfill in your own home. Not something you're ever going to wear. And I get it because I myself have held on to things for ages because of that same feeling. And what I think you can do is when you start with you start really with the tangible stuff in your house that you don't have such emotional attachments to. You know, you just start with this. Maybe if it's your underwear that you're like, I don't care, it's underwear. And start based on a decision of, are these clean and should I wear them or do they have holes in them? And you start with that. And then you keep building yourself up into the harder and harder, harder decisions. Because when you start with the easy stuff and then build up, it becomes easier. And then you can allow yourself to just sort of let that feeling of guilt go. Because, I mean, I would say that most people, after they've passed on, don't care if you still have their sweater.
That's a very good point.
They don't.
No, they don't.
Well, they're not going to haunt you and go, why don't you wear that more often?
You know, my mom had a good idea for things that we want to let go of that are just a little bit difficult, like that are from special people or that had a special memory for us. She said, take a photo of them. Take a photo. They don't take up as much space as the actual items do. And then you've always got the photo to look at because you're right. What good is it doing us in the back of a closet or sitting on a shelf getting dusty?
Yeah. And if it's the case of, you know, t-shirts or something like that, you can always make it into a memory quilt or something like that. And yeah, I mean, doing something small like that so that you actually can enjoy it is a great way to make the process easier by getting creative with it, you know, rather than shoving it in the back of your closet and never looking at it. Because all that is that that's guilt in your closet that you're storing. I mean, that's just energy of guilt. Then that's a horrible reason to keep anything. And the other thing is sometimes you're just not ready to emotionally address it, and that's okay. And you can have certain things that you're like, it's not time for me to deal with that. So I'm going to deal with everything else in my house. And when I'm ready to go back to that, I will. And to give yourself a break and not sit there and condemn yourself or judge yourself because you do have some things that you're just not ready to part with. Because that's okay. It's okay to have those things. It's just that when it becomes everything in your home is electrically charged with emotion, that's when we really have a problem. If you have one or two or three items in there where you're like, I don't know, I'm just not ready, you can either get creative and find another way to use them, or you can just wait for a little bit and maybe at some point you can let them go and just do a self-love-based decision to to love yourself enough to be okay with the fact that you've got a couple of things that you're not ready to let go of.
Mm-hmm. And so let's talk about everything is energy. What exactly do you mean by that?
Well, scientifically speaking, everything that's here has an energy to it. And so if you can apply that in a spiritual way, or you can apply that in an actual scientific way, but either way, there's an energy to everything. And so when you walk into somebody's home and there's clutter everywhere, you feel closed in. I mean, you can feel that energy. And it's not a good feeling. You can't, it's hard to think and it's hard to relax because there's just so much stuff coming up on you. But when you're also living with that stuff, it's not just the physical clutter that's closing in on you. It's the emotional attachment that you've given it. So you could have a pile of financial papers that you've got sitting in your bedroom, and they've been sitting there for 6 months, and all in your, you know, not only is it sitting there physically, but it's also in your head of going, you haven't done that yet. You haven't done that yet. You haven't done that yet. And that's in your bedroom. You know, that causes mental clutter, and that makes it really difficult for you to think. And then you're constantly stressed because you think that you have things to do. You know, it just keeps taking a toll. And when you have, you know, six piles of clothing that you haven't had time, you know, you haven't taken the time to do the laundry. You just felt like you haven't had the time. You haven't done that yet. And it's just more and more judgments of energy that you've piled onto yourself, or the shame of, oh, look at all those outfits that I bought for myself that don't fit me anymore. Or all of those things, you know, that I bought that I never wore, and I spent all this money. And so you've just got guilt and shame sitting in your closet staring at you.
And so what about the, I'm going to wear it someday, it's not been the right circumstances, or I haven't been asked to the, you know, the royal ball, or or whatever it is. How do you get rid of things that, you know you're going to use at some point, but you probably won't ever?
Well, and that's where, if you make a small self-love based decision, you have to be honest with yourself, because that's what self-love is. And so if you go, you know what, I'm really not the kind of person who's going to do this, and that's okay, you can let it go, because you can sort of think, okay, well, if I let this dress go that it's been sitting in my closet for 5 years and I've just not found a reason to wear it, you can think of the smile on somebody else's face who gets to find that when you've donated it, who is wearing it for something fabulous. And you can also think, hey, if I let it go and then an opportunity comes up, maybe I can find something even better that fits me better, that's more updated in terms of fashion. So if you don't think of letting something like that go because you're just not, that's not you and that's not your life right now, and you let that be okay, and then you let the fact of, if I let this go, I'm going to trust that something better is going to show up, it's a lot easier to let go of the stuff. And it's really about retraining your brain on, how do I want to think about my stuff? How do I want to feel about myself? And how do I want to feel about the decisions I'm making on my stuff?
I think that if we let go of the things that, like, say, the dress for the royal ball kind of thing. If we let go of that, I think there's, because there's an emotional attachment or a hope or desire there for someday, that if I let go of that, then I'm letting go of my dream for that royal ball.
Yeah, but are you really? Maybe you're just allowing something better to show up.
Maybe. Yeah, I think there's a dream attached to some of the future things that we think that were.
And I don't, but what you know, I don't necessarily means that you have to go, well, I'm just letting that dream go. And if you're not ready to let it go, keep it in your closet. Wear it on a Friday night while you sit in front of the TV sipping wine, so at least you're still using it. But you know, it could just be that you're not letting the dream go, you're just letting the dress go.
Yes, that's right. It's a different perspective, isn't it?
Yeah.
And so I have a lot of artists that, and creative people, not just artists, artists in all fashion, really, writers and painters and jewelry makers and whatnot, that listen to the show. And I know you mentioned once before when we were talking that artists' things, that's a whole different ballgame, how you organize that. So are there a few tips for artists like myself? I've started organizing my art room. I've got things in bins. Things interrupt me. I haven't gotten back. I bought a shelf, haven't put it up yet. What are your suggestions for artists who have things that are that don't all fit in bins. They're odd sizes. They're, you know, sculptures and sculpture material. And what do you suggest?
Well, I mean, you're artists, so you definitely can probably create places to hold things. I mean, you know, maybe using jars and different other things so that you can create an area where you can hold various things. The other thing is that, you know, I would say maybe one thing you can do is if you have various projects as an artist you want to do to make your life more organized is you dedicate, you know, the first half hour of your process to getting, you know, one project done. And then the next time you do a little bit more of that project so that you are actually getting some of that done. Because I feel like if you're an artist, you really want to focus on the art itself. And so if you've got those unfinished projects in the back of your mind, that's probably going to mess with your creative process. So the sooner that you can sort of put together a system that works for you. And that's what it's all about, is finding a system that works for you, not for anyone else, just for you. And so if it doesn't make sense to anybody else, but you can find it, that's fine.
Do you mean a system for organizing or a system for finishing art projects?
Either way. Yeah, I mean, you know, find the system that works for you. The other thing is put similar things together. Put like things together, because if you're trying to find something, you need to figure out where your brain would go to find that. And so if you're like, okay, I need to go find the paints, and you know that they're next to the brushes, you're always going to find that every single time. And also to put them back where you got them in the first place. Because if you keep things laying scattered and they don't have an actual home, if everything in your house that you own has a place where it belongs and you make a point of actually putting it back there each time, you'll never have to figure out where you put something. You'll always know where it is. And as an artist, even if you have a lot of stuff around, that's going to be the thing that probably keeps you the most organized, is having a space for each thing that you have in that art space, and then making sure that each and every time that you're finished with your work, you put everything back where they belong so that you can then easily find everything again.
That's a good point. I think artists live in a chaos where they know exactly where everything is. It's kind of like the card game, you know, what is that, concentration, where everything is flipped over and you know that's where that card is, that's where that, but it's like anybody walks into the room, it's like, oh my gosh, what happened here?
Yeah, well, and then there's got to be a point of where there's, you know, and there's a fine line and you sort of have to figure it out for yourself. But some people work better in more of a little bit of a disorganized environment because that's where they get their creativity from. But they also have to have a point of, I'm going to keep this space at a certain level so that I can continue my work and it doesn't get so disheveled. So with organizing, as with everything else, you have to get your 8 hours every day. You have to eat, you know, at least 3 meals a day. You have to, you know, get exercise, because these are the things that you do to make sure that the rest of your life goes smoothly and you're, you know, able to think and you're not tired and you're going to be more productive. And so organizing is also sort of one of those things that if you keep doing it every day and make a practice of it, and the small things make a big difference. They're the things that add up. So it really is, you know, when you come home, having a spot for your keys. And so when when you're painting, having a spot for all of your brushes so that you know exactly where that is.
Yes, those are very good points. The small things matter, and it feels really good to accomplish the small things. I had a little wooden bowl that my girls decorated for me when they were very young. You know, it was one of those items I couldn't get rid of, a little bit of an emotional attachment to, I guess, not to the bowl, but to their childhood. And I didn't know what to do with it. So I put it on the hall shelf to hold my keys. It was amazing how something that seemingly insignificant could make me feel so good. It was like checking something off my list, a sense of accomplishment and satisfaction. And it only took me a minute to do it. And you know what? Since that time, I've never wondered where my keys are. That's a good tip for Desperate D. Do a couple of very little things when you come home from work at night, then tackle some of the bigger unpacking and organizing tasks when you have a day off. And I just wanted to let everybody know that Allison has created a series of 6 MP3s that give you the exact same information that you would receive in a personal session with her. And I think it's the perfect program for people who like to work alone or who aren't quite ready for support along with their organizing journey. And if you are on a budget or you just want to get started doing your own thing first, these six MP3s are the way to begin. But if you are ready to jump in with both feet, Allison provides personal coaching via Skype or phone. And she is so amazing. I love you. All you have to do is send her a photo of your trouble area, and she will give you step-by-step instructions on how to organize that area. And she will include links to any supplies or products that you might need for your particular project, and all the time keeping in mind your budget and your preferences. I mean, it just doesn't get any better than this. I think this is a wonderful business practice that you have, Allison. How can people get in touch with you if they want more of your time, your knowledge, your information, your sessions?
Thanks. The easiest way to get in touch with me is to visit me on my website, and that's just ackorganizing.com.
Excellent. Thank you very much for being such a delightful guest on my show. I think we could have talked for hours and hours more. I think you have so much more information and little tips that you could give to us. Perhaps you would like to come back.
Oh, I would love it. Yeah, we could have talked for hours. I do have a lot to share, so I would love that. Whenever you'd like me back, I'd love it too.
Okay, great. Thank you very much. And thank you, my lovely devoted audience, for listening today. And remember, if you have any questions you want answered, be sure to send them to nancy@nancyatnoon.com. Until next time, keep it real.
Thanks for joining us again on Slightly Askew with Nancy at Noon. We've enjoyed your company and hope it's been fun for you too. If you like what you're hearing, please share us with your friends and family because, well, they might like us too. You can find us online at nancyatnoon.com. We've got fascinating blog posts, recipes, self-help books, weight loss CDs, coaching programs, art, jewelry, and all kinds of other cool stuff. Go ahead and check us out. nancyatnoon.com. You'll be glad you did.